There are seven acknowledged wonders of the world. You are about to witness the eighth.
Sometimes when I look at America and we're like, we're becoming so weird and strange, then all I have to do is look at Japan and I feel a lot better about us.
Like we're not selling panties and vending machines.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
We're not paying $1,000 a night to sleep in a drawer.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the weird stuff that comes out of there, though, I think is made for Americans. Maybe. I don't know. Like the tentacle.
I think it's made for them.
Yeah.
Like they definitely. But there's like a huge dichotomy in Japanese culture between the traditionalists, because Japan is also very much like a craft, handmade-centered society in certain parts, more of the rural areas. And there's this huge dichotomy, a huge split between how maybe the more traditional people that live in rural areas are, as opposed to the urban youth that, again, are very much into this, what we call them weeabos over here, right? But that's almost like standard culture among their millennials.
It is?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I just see that and I'm immediately like, that's for Americans.
You see it play out in their parliamentary procedures as well, where you have these huge splits where you literally have like the more rural traditionalist representatives. I mean, just politically shaking their head at what they see happen in Tokyo and Kyoto and the bigger cities.
There's no honor.
There's no honor in it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they see. Yeah, it's extreme decadence, which they say the source of it is from the United States. Like they almost, as we see it for America, they see it coming from America to Japan and Japan just going wild with it. But you see, Japanese are also the type of people, they'll take something and they'll run with it to the extreme. That's how you got Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, okay. Why was that funny? I don't know. Just facts.
Is it my face?
Yeah, I don't know.
The way I said it?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, Japan culture. No, yeah. Japanese culture, it's definitely, I don't know, it seems like a mixed bag. And because you think of the traditionalists, the honor that goes with it and dishonoring yourself and whatnot by wearing a Hello Kitty backpack.
Right.
And, committing harikari in the street because of it.
You still got the traditionalist sword makers that are passing down techniques of making swords that are thousands of years old, maybe hundreds of years old. And then compare that to the guy that's buying a pair of used women's underwear out of a vending machine.
Yeah, calling him a boomer. Go burr.
But it's a similar, maybe, to the big city, small town type thing you see here in the United States, you know? I think it's probably more it's more visible there, that split. Because, again, you're talking about a culture that's ancient, you know?
It's more colorful, split.
Yeah. Remember, this is also a country like 150 years ago, decided that it was going to go back to the way of the samurai. They literally grabbed every firearm in the country and dumped it into the ocean. Anything as advanced or more than a steam-powered engine, they got rid of in their country.
Dang.
They literally were like one of the few countries, maybe the only country, that actually like went back in time.
Hmm.
Because they wanted to go back to more of that traditionalist approach.
Right. Yeah, I'd say the divide is more colorful there.
Yeah.
You know, the rural to the whatever the anime stuff that people wear and whatnot, the Hello Kitty backpacks and whatnot. That's all very, very odd to me.
Yeah.
What about the American culture that wears that?
Well, yeah, that's even worse. And I think they go over there thinking that everybody is going to be down with it. And it just doesn't seem like it. I don't know.
You told me about a picture of a guy who, an American he was like the king of the neck beards, went over there and he's walking down the streets of Tokyo or somewhere. He's carrying his waifu, the body pillow that some neck beards have married them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's walking down the streets of it and there's like a Japanese businessman just like cutting his eyes at him like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, just expecting everybody over there to be on with that, you know, that is just the mainstay culture and it's just not. I don't think the divide is as noticeable here, because no matter what, I mean, think about the urban, you know, versus rural. Like, what are the main differences there? You know, like
urban versus rural.
Yeah, like a big city versus a small town. What's the divide? I don't know. It's not as visible, I don't think, unless you consider, you know, I don't know, maybe a slim fit suit versus a camo outfit. I guess there's
that's a
divide.
Great. I mean, the outfit.
Yeah.
Let's start there. You're, I did a whole kind of social experiment where you two were about the only people that noticed my what I was wearing. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Now, again, I see you guys most, and this is a horrible time to do a social experiment because you're not, you know, going to see a bunch of people on a daily basis. But small town USA, you don't notice labels as often unless it's Mossy Oak and Realtree versus, you know what I mean?
Mm, versus those other brands.
Yeah, I mean, anything else.
Yeah. Certain things you take for granted.
I'll take my camo made in China, please. Thank you very much.
Well, and let's not hate on the camo people because I know my father-in-law, he can tell a really good camo versus a really bad camo any day of the week. Like where some, you know, young lady from New York may be able to tell a good Louis Vuitton versus a fake any day of the week. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there's differences in style or what the look may not be yours, whichever side you go, but they both have an eye for their own style. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Right. You end up taking things for granted, and you, again, your perspective shapes around what's right in front of you.
True.
Of course, like social media, the internet's kind of changed that. Now you can be from the tiniest town in Arkansas and dress, and what I've noticed increasingly here is people acting like they're from, for instance, New York City.
Yeah.
But
acting like it or dressing like it?
A little bit of both. Maybe not so much dressing. I honestly couldn't spot modern fashion from a mile away.
Yeah.
Or like a foot away. But maybe attitudes.
You say that, but I think English fashion plays a lot more into comes a lot more into play or plays a larger part of American fashion than we may give credit. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Like, you noticed my coat today. Was it this morning?
Mm-hmm.
That I was wearing that other coat. It was a pea coat. Maybe that's just through DayZ. I don't know. But you know what I mean? It's a piece of fashion that you may not have otherwise known unless you were into a certain type of fashion.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to be in hip-hop fashion or, you know, dress-up fashion. I mean, I don't know the proper names for these things. You don't have to be in every type of fashion. I think at 40 years of age, I've got a pair of jeans that match just about every type of fashion that's happened in the past 20 years. I don't have JNCOs, you know what I mean? But I have wide leg jeans. I have skinny leg jeans.
Right.
And I have everything in between. So, I don't know. It's fashion is, it flows with the times, but it comes back around, too. I think you're more in fashion, in tune with fashion than you give yourself credit. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, I guess the vintage era making its way back through the hipsters. You know, but that's been going on for quite a while. I mean, Kramer was a hipster, you know.
I don't know if trench coats will ever make it back. I don't know. That's still like
they have a negative connotation, don't they?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if I want to hide my shotgun.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Or my Tommy gun.
Oh,
let's go back
that
even further.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Prohibition era.
Yeah, exactly.
But speaking sometime of that split between like the rural and urban perspective, I was at a locally based government meeting recently, and they were talking about some of the effects that now that this county has legalized the sale of alcohol, which some of our listeners are going to be very familiar with the wet versus dry county. Others may not. I've definitely talked to people who are there like, what?
Yeah.
Like that? I thought that was like the 1920s. And no, but for 100 years after Prohibition was enacted in 1920, this particular county in Arkansas and quite a few of them, I think just a little less than half of them are dry counties, where the sale of alcohol manufacture is still prohibited. And going to this meeting where they were trying to decide some of the regulations to enact locally, of course, there's statewide regulations that'll throw the guidelines out there that manufacturers and distributors and sellers, all that, will have to adhere to. But they were thinking about maybe putting some local spin on some of those regulations. And the questions and the concerns and the comments were all like, guys, you have never lived in anywhere that actually sells alcohol, have
you?
I mean, these are things like they were thinking they were like trying to reinvent the wheel. Like, there are problems that they thought were the first, they were the first ones to ever foresee these problems. And it's like, guys, I'm not going to say it's simple. It's just, again, it's a lack of knowledge about maybe a different place.
I found those people often do not come to city council meetings, tourism meetings, any kind of meeting that would deal with this type of thing. They don't tend to show up. So, i.e., it helps along with their – it forwards their, you know, ignorance of the situation.
Sure. Unfortunately – not unfortunately. Again, it's very understandable. You grow up knowing what's around you, what you know. And these were folks who were hosting the meeting. So,
right.
They attend them frequently. And
that's a, I think people just scared of change around here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's a big thing. I don't know.
And I'm scared of change, so I can understand sometimes.
We all are to an extent.
Yeah.
I would say, but there's certain change that I'm definitely not scared of.
Sure.
Plenty of it, you know, maybe just I think people are more open to change in a bigger city, you mm-hmm. know, because things are constantly changing. You know, when you get that many people there, I mean, inevitably things are going to be changing a lot.
Oh, absolutely. But it's dynamic. And
yeah, I mean, going back to the fashion thing, like even just you've talked about some people showing up to a city council meeting in sweatpants and stuff. That's something that just I don't think happens in other bigger cities and stuff. I mean, maybe you throw on a tie, you know. So and I'm not saying one is better than the other, but it kind of I'm bringing it back to the Japan thing where there's a noticeable divide.
Mm.
We can just see it in their culture way more than it's like it's kind of camouflaged in ours.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to say it.
Yeah.
And again, sweatpants maybe in an area like this is more approachable. You know, as opposed to, I made the mistake a few times when I first started working a professional environment around here of wearing a suit and tie, and honestly the question I got the most was like, oh, it's a funeral, you know? I mean,
right.
It puts people off, you know,
right.
when you dress like that maybe in an area like this.
Yeah.
And again, if you went to an important meeting in a L.A. or Chicago wearing sweatpants,
right?
But it's
the
kind of
would be bad.
Yes, but it's kind of stupid. At the same time, like I like a human comfort myself. I'd like all the other humans to be as comfortable. I mean, wear sweatpants, man. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know. So around here, if you show up to a city council in sweatpants, hey, if that's your more comfortable for you, I'm happy for you. You know.
Whereas there's a very good listener of mine a few years ago. I think he moved away. That's why he's not currently listening. But he would wake up and put a suit on every morning. And his argument was that when you feel the best, you do the best, you look the best. The whole, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, you look the best, you feel the best.
Yeah, and you know, and there is a level of that. I totally get that.
Absolutely,
I totally get that. But if that the best forces you to be in an uncomfortable situation, you often will shut down even further than what your productivity would have been had you just worn some comfortable sweatpants in the first place.
Yeah, I can see
wearing
that.
Some slacks and a blazer in the blazing heat.
Exactly.
Now you're sweating.
Yeah.
Now it's you're not exactly looking so sharp, are you? Are you going to sweat through a blazer?
I was going to say, even worse wearing khaki pants, sweating through those bad boys.
Yeah.
I almost feel like as long as I'm wearing shoes. Yeah, but given the rest of the clothes. But I feel like shoes is almost something, and maybe around here in this certain state, it can almost be an optional form of attire when you're going out. But I've had so many dreams about where I'm situations, school or like work. I'm fully clothed, but I don't have shoes on.
Yeah,
and I'm just walking around in socks. And in my dreams, I so vividly call like walking down hallways, hoping that people don't notice that I'm just wearing like white socks. And I don't even own white socks.
Yeah.
That's what they're always are in the dream.
Yeah. I think
socks with that.
Yes. Oh, definitely tube socks. Yeah.
I think people around here, man, they must have really good immune systems. How much do you take through your feet? You know, it's so cold, the ground, and people are just running through a wet parking lot into Easy Mart without shoes on. And like just the dirty feet and.
I've seen Caitlin. You see how long it is from our doorway to the mailbox.
Yeah.
It's 100-foot at least walk, and she'll do it with no shoes on. And she could like run it if she wanted to. I take a step like if I step on like one pebble, I'm like,
crippling.
I'm like a little kid. Yeah, like a little baby. Like
you just gotta not think about it because in a situation where you need it's aliens behind you.
Yeah.
Oh, you're running.
Yeah.
And it's you're not thinking about your feet at that point. Just always refer back to John McCain. John McCain.
I was like okay, so you just got captured by you just got shot down by the North Vietnamese. All right.
I'm
what,
sure.
What
he,
do you do next?
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't have shoes either. So
yeah,
John
yeah.
McCain, John McClane,
yes.
either
both
one,
both of them, yeah.
both got some bad times on the feet. So, yeah. You know, just think about those guys, both of them.
It's just like when you see in a horror movie people just like running through the woods barefoot, and you're like, ah, I couldn't do that. Yes, you could.
You could.
And just like I've heard you before, Tyler, say, like, I couldn't eat a rat. Yes, you could. Okay.
Yeah.
Give it a couple days. Yeah. You'll be glad to eat that rat.
True. I just don't want to be at that point.
No.
If I'm at that point, I know I can eat the rat. All what I'm saying is I'm not going to let it get there.
Oh, hopefully, right, yeah. Right. Either through force or pity.
Yeah, or I'll cash out.
Yeah.
I will cash out big time. I don't know how you do it in an apocalypse, though.
I don't know. I don't think it lets you sharpen, lets you do it with long sticks anymore.
No,
so.
No. Yeah, you'd have to...
find a zombie.
Find a zombie or just make sure you always have one round in the pistol.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you mess up and shoot your jaw out, and now you're just...
Oh, gosh.
You're just crawling on the ground, jawless.
Horrible story. Worked as a candy striper.
I'm sorry, could you say that maybe it's a regrettable story?
Regrettable story. Worked as a candy striper in a hospital. Y'all know what a candy striper is? It's basically a volunteer. Yeah, well, I was 13 years old. So they took volunteers from, a lot of the parents of nurses, things of that nature. The kids would often be candy stripers. I saw a guy that had put a shotgun to his chin and blew his chin off, and he walked in, had shotgun in his hand and everything still.
Imagine feeling like such a failure that you're going to kill yourself and you can't even do that right.
I mean, that was probably one of the turning points in gruesome, like in-person gruesomeness at 13 years of age, seeing a dude without a jaw.
Yeah.
That would be impressionable.
It was. Yeah. It was quite.
But that's quite common.
He walked in there. I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt.
No.
He was walking in, still had the double barrel shotgun in his hand, and he obviously didn't say nothing.
Fix me up, I'll try again.
Yeah.
Golly.
But they say it's a lot of times the folks who use a gun to end their own life, they like just bought it. They know nothing about firearms. Let's say you go buy a 12 gauge and you're like, well, I'll just whatever the cheapest shell is. So you go buy some birdshot or target shot. All that's going to do is remove your face and put you paralyzed in a hospital bed wishing that you were dead. Now you're really wishing you were dead. A building is the only way to go. A very tall skyscraper.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, and you're supposedly going to have a nice trip on the way down.
Yeah, it'd be crazy. Yeah, the adrenaline rush, it's almost like a hallucinogenic experience, right?
If it doesn't black you out immediately.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Mm.
Like which wouldn't be bad. Yeah.
I mean, you don't die from the hitting the ground. You die from a heart attack on the way down, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds all right.
Peaceful. You know,
just peaceful. Just.
Maybe if I fell by accident.
Would you come to terms with it on the way down?
I'd try.
You'd try.
But maybe I'm going to bounce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
This is like be hopeful. Like surely positive thinking can get me out of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've watched enough cartoons. I know an awning will save my life.
Exactly.
All right. Well, here, fourth episode, Regrettable Podcast. Here we are. Patrick said it the other day. I think we're podcasters now. I think we could say that.
Okay. Wow.
Is it three episodes in, four episodes in? You can be like, okay, I've done enough of these. Where I can put that on my resume.
Okay. Yeah, all my favorite podcasts, two of them were just like, both of them celebrated 10 years recently at the same time. Another one that I really love is like our 200th episode. I'm like, hey, we're up number four.
Hey, yeah, that's a milestone, I think. Finding the groove, as they say.
Absolutely. First step's the hardest.
Yes.
First couple of grooves we jumped into were political. Due to timing, I think.
The siege
and all that stuff.
Yeah. We would have seemed stupid not to talk about it.
Right.
And now we seem stupid talking about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the thing is that if you're coming here for information, wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong. Right. You are wrong.
Yeah, you came here for information, right?
It's
wrong.
Kim Il-jong, not Kim Jong-il.
Yeah.
I listened to that several times. Like, Patrick, you know this. Okay, so don't listen to me.
I believed it when you said it.
Yeah, me too. It sounded good enough.
To me. It was good. You had the ill. Yeah. I knew there was an ill in there.
Yeah, Jay and I were embarrassing ourselves while we thought Patrick was making it all up, and he was the biggest disappointment of all.
I know.
I
pooped my pants in the process too. Yeah. I didn't tell you guys that.
I promise you, I don't get embarrassed. I promise. Yeah. I will find out I did something wrong and be like, "Hey, I did it wrong."
Yeah,
it's just people. Some people don't like that about me. I guess.
I think a lot of people have a hard time coming to terms with that type of thing. that you cannot admit, you know, that you're flawed or wrong or this and that, and then when you can't, when you do, people are like, oh, you're okay. It's like, hey, I'm not saying this so to get that out of you. I know it's maybe sounds like it, so shame on me, you know, like. It's the equivalent of putting a Facebook picture up being like, I'm ugly, you know, but I'm not using it as a fault. I'm using it to better myself, you know. I want to be hard on myself, you know, and crack that whip and just say it's not good enough, or it was my fault, or like I made a mistake. I don't think any of those things are that wrong. And the more that you say it around certain people, they're like, oh, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself. Why?
Yeah, the people that say that, they're the ones that are looking for your comfort and coddleness when they say it to you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They're like, oh, woe is me. They're waiting for you to comfort them. Those are the people that try to make you feel bad for, you know, saying that. When it's me, I'm like, nah, I made the mistake. My bad. I'll fix it. And that's another thing. People today think that one mistake is the be-all, end-all.
Right.
It's like, oh, You're not going to be working here anymore because you made a mistake.
Right.
Or you're not going to be living this life anymore because you made a mistake. You know, I mean, whatever. Mm-hmm. Your whole family is going to cancel you because you made one mistake.
Right.
I think the world is too quick to say, okay, now we're going to cancel them entirely because of a mistake.
Right. Yeah, you can't just mess up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's perpetuated in our entertainment news and whatnot. You can't just mess up or not even really mess up, you know, like you get all kinds of people. I don't know. I think there was a Matt Damon. There was something with Matt Damon. What did he say? He said something about, he was talking about Harvey Weinstein and somebody else. And he was like, look, there's a big difference, okay, between rape and patting somebody on the ass.
Oh, I agree.
And he got completely, you know, he had to be, I was ignorant, I was wrong, I was a mistake. It was like, man, what are you talking about? You just said something that was like,
but that you believed in.
That you believed in, and it's true. It's true. You cannot group every canceled person, and like with sex offenders and everything, you cannot group everything all into the same basket.
Sure. Everybody's not Bill Cosby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, he Thank drugged God. Women. Mm-hmm. He drugged women and did things to them.
Yeah.
Everybody's not R. Kelly.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't even know any of the other, like, I'm trying to come up with names of people who, like, didn't do. Al Franken. You know, Al Franken is not Harvey Weinstein or Bill Cosby. Yeah.
Bean Dad that we talked about recently.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of folks will remember Bean Dad, who made his kid like 6 hours like figure out how to open up a can of beans. And he did like a Twitter tweet storm the whole process, which is, it's just, to me, it's just dumb for the whole, it's just dumb,
yeah,
you know. But he tried to couch it in terms that he was teaching his kids self-reliance and figuring out things on your own and stuff like that. Well, he got a bunch of flack from folks on Twitter saying, oh, you're a terrible parent, this is like borderline child abuse. And then he comes and he apologizes for it afterwards. Like, I think I read on air, I would love to go back and find it, but he was literally like, I mean, it was almost verbatim, like, I'm sorry that I perpetuated more hate in the world. And maybe he was tongue-in-cheek. It did not seem, there was no LOL or smiley face. And as well-worded and everything as it was like, because the guy's like a musician, so I guess he's got some public career, so he has to keep that in mind. And his apologia that he comes out with is again just it's so he just backtreads so much,
and you give the room there.
Yes,
you give away the ground. You can never make it back. I hate everybody in the Bean Dad story.
Yes.
There's not a redeeming thing about the
you
whole thing.
You hate more that the story happened. I
hate that it's even a thing that we're talking about.
Right.
Well, it was a great funny bit on the radio, and now it's on the podcast.
I mean,
I guess. No.
Depends.
Again, you read the apology. If you were to take it out of context, it's like, did he orchestrate a genocide or something? You know?
Yeah. Child sex ring.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you were out of context. It's just like, this guy must be the worst man in the world. It's like, oh, no, he told his kid to figure out how to open up a can of beans with a can opener.
And laughed at it.
Yeah.
That goes farther than me.
Mm-hmm.
That goes, I would not have laughed at that. I take that back. I would have thought, you don't know how to use it? Oh, crap. I forgot to teach you how to do that.
I don't know.
Because you're my child. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
I guess it was just different back in the day, man. Because when you were a kid, say, everybody would have loved to watch old Jay Lindley trying to open a struggle up a can of beans, and they'd tussle your hair and call you Rusty. And it just doesn't work like that anymore.
Yeah. It reminds me, I have a friend whose brother told me once, that what he likes to do for entertainment with his kids is he'll glue, like super glue a penny to the floor and watch them for hours. This is a quote, what he told me, watch them for hours, try to pick up the penny. Nowadays, you would get your kids taken away from you for that.
Yeah. Flea market I used to frequent down the road from my house had a like a couple of dollar coins and half dollars like epoxied into the ramp that went into their specific flea market booth, and that was like their entertainment. People walking in trying to grab that, that was their entertainment. They loved that hilarity.
I mean, back in the day, you would shove poop in a dollar and lay it on the floor, and then wait for people to come by, and they grab it, and that's poop dollar.
Yeah,
now that's funny, man. That's
and that's
funny.
Like a hate crime.
That's
now.
A hate crime.
Say, yeah. That's a hate crime now. Of course, biological hate crime.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's biological warfare.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. Been attacked.
Yeah.
I just think it's too easy to get canceled. Look at Bean Dad. Yep. That's such a ridiculous story. Just the whole tale.
Yeah.
Is nothing but I hate everything. That's pretty much what I take away from the whole story. Just how quick, like, I mean, it's not child abuse what you're doing. Yet a few people get on Twitter and say, I don't like that. And then all of a sudden, what you're doing is child abuse. It's all, I don't know.
The fact that most folks, I think on Twitter especially, live within very much their own echo chamber. They somehow stumble across B-Dad's post. They share it on their page, which is then filled with people who think exactly like they do,
right.
Which then all of a sudden becomes, quote-unquote, like public opinion,
right.
When it's by far not.
Yeah,
okay?
whenever you hear, like, Twitter says,
the
internet agrees.
Right, yeah.
What? No, they don't.
That's two people out of 200,000 tweeting about it. Two people. So,
yeah.
You don't know.
Go to any random video. Go to a family enjoying a slip and slide in their backyard and scroll down in the comments, and all of a sudden it's like race war.
Yeah,
exactly. It's crazy.
Some folks have said, now this could be extremely controversial, I'll leave it up to you guys whether we want to leave it in this podcast, but that this cancel culture is really like an evolution of the anti-bullying campaigns that we saw in the early 2000s, and that it's created like increasingly soft and thin-skinned people that bullying. I experienced a little bullying. I think we've talked before that both of y'all have as well, and we kind of use it as an opportunity to be better. Eventually, at some point, you know, not only do you, of course, the cliche thing is, oh, well, the guy who's bullying is probably got bullied by somebody else or his parents. He's got problems at home or something. But you know what? It's also it gives you a chance to be a better person and be like, you know what? I'm not going to get bullied next time.
Right.
And by pushing this anti-bullying campaign, bullying is, well, I mean, now you have like cyber bullying on Instagram and stuff like that, but like physical bullying in schools, from what I understand, is just not a very common thing anymore. So now you've removed this kind of like, this like testing ground for kids, you know, that turn them maybe to give them a little tougher skin,
right,
in the future. You get bullied a little bit, eventually, you're gonna be like a stronger person from it.
Yeah,
it's an extremely controversial thing to say these days, I guess, but and that increasingly that softness now those kids are adults, now they're like policymakers, you know, now they're people in positions of power, and now you have it where this is gonna be a dated reference, but Ann Coulter is supposed to go talk at UC Berkeley, and the like administration gets death threats from students saying, well, that's infringing on our safe space. Do not have her up here. We're going to boycott the school, all this and that. It's like, yeah, Ann Coulter's a crazy alien looking woman.
Yeah.
With just crazy alien ideas. But she's still, if they want to invite her to UC Berkeley to speak, come on. It's not like people are going to listen to her and be like hypnotized by her and all of a sudden like believe in the same thing she says. It's very good sometimes to be confronted with things that are opposite to what you believe in, because again, it's going to make you a stronger person in the end of it.
And it is berserkly. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't agree with anybody in that story, because don't cancel, don't bar her from coming to the school, but also Ann Coulter, why are you going to Berkeley?
Like,
what's the idea there?
I mean, she sold like, I don't know if they were like New York Times bestsellers, I really don't know, but I mean, so books on the bestseller list is Berkeley. You can invite a bestselling author, maybe a lot of them are just like, nah, we ain't gonna go, but Ann Coulter's like, please, I'll be there.
But her books always have the same,
you know, it'll be like The Hole, how Democrats are digging America deeper and deeper. Or like, you
and
know.
A picture of her on it. Listeners, a great way to know if a political book is self-serving and not worth your time to read, if a picture of the author is on the front cover, do not buy it. It is not worth the money.
That's that Dick Cheney book. He's on the cover, but it's not a flattering picture.
No,
he looks like the Thing.
I had to read that one.
Yeah.
Was it good?
Oh, it was.
Really?
Yes.
Sweet.
It was basically just like 500 pages of him blaming everything that's ever happened wrong in this country under his watch, and everything that's ever happened wrong to him, blaming it on other people.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great.
But it was a great read.
Yeah. But he's a good writer, for sure. And a very kind of a, at least for our generation, a somewhat of a mystical figure, you know? I really just wanted to get to the part where he talks about shooting his friend.
Yeah.
On a hunting trip.
How does he describe that?
almost like it was that guy's fault.
Yeah.
Get in the way of
my barrel.
In
front of me. Yeah.
That's fine.
Guns don't kill people. Stupid people who walk in front of guns kill people.
That's right. I always wanted to go hunting for silver-haired septuagenarians, so. Well, I don't know. I think it's just so easy. I don't know. You got to be careful. Got to be careful what you're tweeting and putting on Instagram. You could just
Facebook Live. We say things off the air that we would never say on the radio, and we have thought to ourselves, "Oh crap!"
Yeah,
remember we're live, guys. You know what I mean?
We've deleted whole videos because of a slip up.
Yes, of a few words. Absolutely, it may seem so. Like Bean Dad's a perfect example. It may seem so innocent at first. It may seem like something that's nostalgic to your childhood. Like, I remember my dad made me figure out things on my own,
right.
And I became a man because of it.
Right.
Well, those things can blow up in your face very quickly these days.
Yeah. When it comes to the safe space type of people, I don't know, definitely a new thing. I don't think anybody jumping out of an airplane in World War II was worried about their safe space, you know? And I just don't know if we're ever going to see a generation like that. Sure, given generation full of... I mean, not the greatest people, like, socially, you know, because we're a little more progressive now, but...
Let's look at that generation, though. There were plenty of people that lived in New York City that wore ball gowns and never wore a hiking boot in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And were not capable of living on their own, or, you know what I mean? So there were still plenty of... I mean, I'm not saying that was the majority like now.
Right.
The people that can't sustain their own lives if they don't have a grocery store there... And the, you know, cable box there or whatever. But even in the 50s or the 30s, or there were still people that were very, quote, unquote, cityfied. We'll use that term because it's how they use it around here. But even though it was back then, you know what I mean? It was that was the greatest, quote, unquote, generation. But there's still people that didn't know how to change their oil. They had to use somebody to change their own oil. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe progressive in different ways. And I don't have much to go off of here, so forgive me and take this with a grain of sand here. Is it a grain of salt?
Grain of salt.
Grain of salt. Take me with a grain of salt here. Recently watched a documentary about Appalachia and specifically the history of like language in Appalachia. And I was really struck in the comments section by a bunch of folks who said they were African American, who said that they had been to a lot of these spots or they'd actually grown up, and talking about how they never noticed a hint of racism. Now, there was a couple others who were like, I saw some, you know. Yeah. But again, these were folks, like some of them had claimed to be like 60, 70 years old. You know, again, it's a YouTube accounts. I don't know how to verify any of that, but just taking it at face value, there was a lot of folks who said they were African American and they were older and they either grew up or visited these places, and they said they never experienced any racism in their life. And the way that they described it is that these were just very, very poor places where nobody, the doesn't matter what skin color you were all just dirt poor, and it was more of a class thing. You would notice somebody's like nice car before you'd notice their skin color.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean,
okay, fake,
I could see that.
Fake YouTube commenter.
I take your it's just hard.
Some point.
I guess what I'm getting at there is that it's you know, trying to compare different generations, different time periods, it's just so difficult because we're a product of the circumstances, right?
But at the same time, we pull the best of past generations.
Yes.
So that's what we see. So it's sure. not at anybody's fault to notice the greatest generation had the greatest group of people. You know what I mean? Right, right. I understand that.
And we can't blame the 101st Airborne for not being woke before woke was a thing. So, you know, I don't know. I think back then woke was like you took too much Coke.
Yeah. Yeah. But there were some things, though, that struck me, again, if I can take this a little further. 101st Airborne, they take Italy. One of the first things that the division headquarters and orders down from Pentagon is they produce pamphlets that not only give people like basic phrases in Italian, but they say don't give too much money to people because you're going to ruin their economy. Pay fair market values, or if they are they just give them what they ask you. And it was, again, teaching them how to interact better in that society, and how with the very thought that, like, hey, we're coming in here. We don't want to have to come to Italy again 50 years later and do this all over. So let's make this into a decent democratic society. And that's going to start with you guys, the American soldiers, coming in and setting the right example. The early parts of the Iraq War, there was not that.
Right.
You know, there were American soldiers that were sent over there were taught, like, you know, stop. Or we'll shoot, things like that, you know. But that, like, cultural, it's going to sound so snowflakey, but that cultural sensitivity training, it took years for that to be implemented among our forces that were fighting in Iraq.
Yeah.
Whereas we went, the second we took, like, Sicily and went up the boot of Italy, that we were, like, putting that in our soldiers' minds is you got to be culturally sensitive.
Right. You can't just export democracy, like, without... some cultural sensitivity, coming in with a plan and this and that. I mean, if we're going to occupy a country, the people who are occupying it might as well learn the language and learn the customs and not stick the boot all over the place.
When it's, are you a liberator or an occupier?
Right.
You know, or a conqueror.
Right.
And I would dare say that the 101st Airborne of 1944 was more woke than the Michigan National Guard in 2004.
Right. Yeah, that's a good statement. I think you're right.
I follow that take all the way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, if this was sports, if we're doing a sports podcast, that would be the hottest take of the night, bro. You know.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I suppose we should probably get into today. Of course, it seems every time we do a podcast, there's something happening politically in the news.
Hit the news sounder, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Hit the news sounder.
Let's see. The first one, like, nothing happened.
Yeah.
Right?
We actually got to talk about ourselves a little bit, break the ice. Yeah.
All my preparation, which I never even got to, is how much I miss Christmas, because it was, like, it recorded, like, the week after Christmas, right? Yeah. So I didn't get into any of that. So my first long bit on this podcast was going to be about how much I miss Christmas. And then the second one is the Capitol riot.
Yeah.
And then the third one, there was something happening next. Oh, the impeachment was happening last Wednesday. Today, it's inauguration.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess on his way out, Trump handing out some pardons, like hotcakes, I guess.
You got a pardon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Oprah
Everybody
Winfrey style.
Get a pardon.
Look under your seat. You got a pardon.
It's up to 100 and something now, right?
It's altogether about 100, and I think it's exactly 143 commutations and pardons. So a pardon is like you're either serving time or you haven't quite got to sentencing yet, but you've been convicted. So there's been about 70 or 73 of those, and then the commutations is, okay, you've been convicted. Maybe you've served your time. Now we're going to, like, more or less expunge that off your record. So I believe if you have your sentence commuted as a felon, that reinstates your voting and gun ownership rights. Don't hold me to that, but I believe that that's almost like kind of give you a clean slate there.
I guess it depends on whether you were a felon before, right? If you were a felon...
If you're a multi-time.
Oh, maybe, for a different situation. Yeah. But it's almost like now this is, like, sealed and it couldn't be used against you. Let's say like you're in a three-strike state or something, now that would not count as one of your strikes anymore.
Basically, in 2024, Lil Wayne will not be casting a vote still.
That's very true.
Yeah, so we got Lil Wayne, we got Kodak Black, we got Steve Bannon, and then some randoms that I don't know much about. Some Democratic mayor who took a bunch of money. He got pardoned.
You're talking about Kwame Kirkpatrick from Detroit. Right. Yeah, the mayor of Detroit.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Serving. He was like, I don't know how long it was until a 28-year sentence on racketeering, on fraud, tax evasion, just a bunch of things. He was like shaking down contractors and stuff.
Yeah. What's the idea behind pardoning a guy like that?
A Democrat, too. Yeah. It's very interesting. And you see, he also gave pardons to quite a few allies of like Republican political opponents.
Hmm. Kanye West allies, too.
Yeah. Okay.
You notice there were a lot of allies of Kanye West, and in the music. Well, I mean, you mentioned Kodak Black. There was a couple of other ones that were music related for whatever reason.
I'm going to be honest. I'm most surprised by Bannon, Steve Bannon.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like he was kind of cast out of the Trump orbit. You know, he did a lot of very embarrassing things. That interview he gave with Michael Wolff, I forget what the name of that stupid book is, but it was one of the big first tell-all books. Yeah. This is Michael Wolff, who literally just sat on a couch like in a hallway in the West Wing and just recorded and just wrote down everything that he heard people saying as they walked by.
Yeah,
and like didn't bother to verify any of it. But he did have some interviews with Bannon where I don't remember any of the specifics, but Bannon was more or less like trashing Trump's family.
Right.
It was just very embarrassing when it came out. And it was obviously like, this guy's maybe not as good of a friend for you as he was. And then you have the whole, what was that? He helped co-found this Build the Wall organization to raise money from private individuals, just from people like us who wanted to see the border wall funded and constructed. He collected donations from them, and this group did, not just Bannon, but and then used it for like lavish private jet expenses, you know, flying over here, nice hotels. Actually, to the point, it was so bad that the FBI, when they arrested him, they actually flew onto his yacht, out in the ocean, and arrested him there.
Yeah,
you know that.
So apparently they've been rekindling their friendship.
Okay.
Of recent is what I read. I just don't see the gain from that. And I don't understand how that would help his cause, or like if people around here are like, oh, thank God he pardoned Bannon. Like, great, on his way out. Like, you're the people he was taking from.
Yeah.
It was you.
Believe me, if no one that works at Goldman Sachs is a friend of you. Okay.
Yeah.
Average listener, all right?
Yeah.
Unless you are a Wall Street investment banker, Goldman Sachs, anybody who's ever worked there, they do not have your interests in
mind. We've been getting a little bit of flack for all the Trump hate, and it's just...
I thought we were equal opportunity offenders.
I thought so, too. I didn't think we were that bad. We could be a lot worse on everybody.
A lot worse on the folks who surrounded Trump. You know, I'll give a Trump a pass that maybe he was serious about the things that he wanted to do. But then the folks that ended up getting into the Trump orbit, I mean, just destroyed everything at every turn. It seems.
And I just don't understand. I mean, it's the same type of people who go on Twitter and call everybody snowflakes. But you make a couple little comments and don't cry. For a person like Trump, he'll be just fine.
Yeah, he doesn't care about your
tears. He does not care about
you. Especially if they're tears for him.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
Yeah. Don't feel sorry for a guy who owns multiple planes.
Yeah, exactly.
Has a gold toilet. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, he's good.
He's fine.
He's fine. And we can poke a little fun. It's just ridiculous. Snowflake, you need your safe space. And then you say, well, don't say that. But Trump, man, you got to respect the office.
Believe me. Hey, both sides of the political spectrum love political correctedness. You know?
When it works for them.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I hear all the time very conservative people who are making fun of liberals for being political correct. And then like CNN's like, he used an assault rifle in this incident. And they're like, it's not an assault rifle. Okay. It's a military style, semi-automatic, recreational/sporting goods rifle.
Yeah. That just doesn't flow off the tongue as
no,
well.
No, that is. Yeah. That, yeah. Right.
AR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, let me just say, if you are maybe a liberal progressive person, you're like, well, AR stands for assault rifle. It does not. It stands for Armalite rifle, which is the original manufacturer.
The brand,
so,
yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Take that, liberal scum.
Take that.
Yeah.
But hey, conservative scum, okay?
Yeah. Exactly.
Listen, that I have an AR-15. Well, I don't now, but I did. It was not for deer hunting. It was not for varmint hunting. That is for killing people.
Okay? Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Don't come on my property, bro.
It just depends on who's around me. My political views are like a chameleon. Yeah. Like if yes. Like all I want to do is offend you.
Absolutely.
So the moment I'm definitely more of a left-leaning guy, but the moment I'm in a room full of left-leaning people going like, "Oh yeah, I know, right? Me too." Yeah. And it really gets under my skin
exactly.
To the point where you just have to be like, you know, "Build the wall." Like
how many miles he make again?
Yeah.
Sometimes you hate the folks the most that remind you of yourself.
Yeah. And that's the thing. When we get into it, man, when we get into it, say, around the campfire talking about this, we will be so hard on our own side. Why wouldn't you be? Why, yeah. If you're a super conservative person and you love Trump, why aren't you going, "What the hell, Trump?
Yeah.
What the hell?" Yeah, it's every misstep along the way. If you're really for him, he's not making the right decisions.
I like to think there are a lot of level-headed Republicans that do say that to their TV. It's just the squeaky wheel, quote unquote, crazies that we hear daily. Does that make sense? I mean,
yeah, but
again, I mean, there's a lot of people sharing the crap on the social media.
Yeah.
I get that. So, and too many people are too quick to jump and believe anything negative about the other guy.
Right.
I don't care who the other guy is. Trump is the other guy. Biden's the other guy. If it's negative, oh, Kamala Harris slept with such and such to get where she's at today. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It's whoever they can bash on the other side to either make their guy look good or to make that guy or gal look bad.
Yeah.
I guess I've just never seen a political class so personally offended when they see, quote unquote, their elected leader being made fun of. Now, don't get me wrong, a lot of the Alec Baldwin, I never want to see on TV again, okay? That is ridiculous. You're terrible at doing the Trump impersonations. Please. Or he's done, right? I think he's done. Surely he's got to be done with it. But there's been a lot of comedic repertoires done of Trump that are just extremely offensive and just over the top. I mean, we're not even going to Kathy Griffin, not even going that far. But the legitimate concerns, you know, like we do live in an environment where I'm like, I just don't know about his whole like illegality of the travel bans. Like, you Trump hater.
Yeah,
he's the greatest guy ever. Like, I'm sorry. I like to hold all of my political or my elected officials. I like to hold their feet to the fire a little bit, whether they got a D or an R next to their name. I really don't care because I'm an American. Okay. And it's not the Democratic Party. That's my first priority. It's not the Republican Party. It is America. Okay. Yeah. And I kind of just want whoever's going to do the best for us. And sure, I have my own idea of what best means. But that's what we're here to hash it all about and not get so easily offended and knee-jerk reactions when it's just, again, slightly contrary to whatever thought bubble you have around you at that moment.
And if you can make a valid argument against me, I'm willing to hear it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's the other thing. And guess what? That goes for liberals, too. I mean, it goes with anybody. The moment that you make a salient good point and there's no, I mean, you just go crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that's your only response at that point. I do. Everybody does it. You know, when they have this belief that you're, you know, saying you're adamant about it and somebody can just destroy it with one statement, you have nothing to say back. You just get angry.
Sure. And I will say as a, you know, I like to see myself as a progressive person that is also rooted in some small town values. So I like to see a little bit of both sides of it.
To talk about like how much you change over time. What I thought was cool or important 10 years ago versus now, you know? Every time I sit here and I'm trying to think of funny stories to tell on the podcast, I'm just like, man, that was embarrassing. Like, that's just a false representation of myself. You know, I don't think like that anymore. I don't think that type of thing is cool. In fact, I'm a little embarrassed that I thought it at the time. You know, every 2 years, I'd say two. I'd go as low as two that you burn 20% of your thoughts, embarrassed that you even had them in the first place. You know, so sometimes when I think about some old friends, you know, and this and that, how different we are now, you know, it's just hard. It's hard coming up with good material when I almost just feel like I have to stay so fresh with it because I don't even want to reveal those parts of my life.
Mm. You're almost and you're a different person then, right? I mean, looking back at some of your friends, let's say between 18 and 21, any of them that you are still like close friends with?
No. I mean, I have my best friend I grew up with from beginning, Anthony. He and I don't like hang out anymore. Obviously, he lives in Florida now. Even when he lived in Oklahoma, in Edmond, and I lived in Oklahoma City, we didn't quote unquote hang out a whole lot. But that would be the one person, we literally grew up together. Our first Easter was together. You know what I mean? We're a month apart. So.
And kind of friend like back then, you were like, we're gonna be friends forever. You exactly. could not never imagine a time where you wouldn't be friends, right?
Right, right. And our wives, we have had one dinner together. The four of us, his wife and my wife and I. That's how many times we've seen each other in the past 10 years.
I don't think it's purposeful, right?
No.
It's more just life, I guess, adulthood. Absolutely. And growing older and whatnot. You're going to fork away. But, God, so just the way I used to act, you know, it just like sickens me, you know? How to explain it? Being super combative.
Right.
About a lot of topics and this and that. Treating people like they're dumb, like they, you know, like I'm better. Yeah. You know, that was a big thing. We used to joke about that in high school. Like, oh, we're just better than everybody. Let's embrace that. Let's lean into it. You know, and that was funny at the time. But now when I think back to that, I'm just like, oh, what a douche I was. You know, and that's not bad.
Right.
That's not a bad thing to look back and criticize your old self.
That's
growth. I'm not that guy anymore. Yeah, that's growth. Yeah. And that's going to happen naturally. I don't feel good or bad about it. I think it's just what everybody kind of goes through.
And that might be why you don't connect with some of those old friends, because some of those old friends haven't changed, haven't adapted, haven't, you know, become better people.
Right.
They still think they're better than most people.
Right.
Some of them do.
Yeah. One of the most awkward friend experiences I had recently was not very long ago, last year sometime, met up with a childhood friend that I hadn't seen. Well, I saw him once since we were like best friends up to 13. I moved away, didn't see him again until I was 18. We like hung out for a few days and then didn't see him again until like last year. And we decided, my wife and I and his wife and I were like, well, we were attending a convention in the town that he lived in. So we're like, hey, we're going to be there. Let's meet up. And we were talking like, oh, we'll spend a whole weekend, do all this stuff together. Well, we met up first for lunch, and that's where we were going to like formulate our plans to hang out for the weekend. And it was so awkward. It was like an extremely awkward situation. All we kept going was like, yeah, you remember when we used to play like Mario Kart all the time? And we would like shoot bottle rockets at frogs and stuff. And it was like so distant we couldn't relate anymore. We didn't hang out. We haven't talked since.
Oh, right. Man.
You know, it's just going back to how people change and sometimes the things that you hold on to in your youth and especially your early youth like that, you know, they're fleeting, you know? And
embarrassing sometimes. And I'm glad I turned out the way I did. You know, glad that I don't, you know, say hang on to like a lot of the things that I harp on are just American society in general, behavior and how people act and this and that. Super self-important, right? Like they just believe that they're whatever they have to say needs to be said and heard.
Right.
You know, I'm of the mindset I'll say what I want, but if you don't listen, I don't care, you know, which I think is a healthy one, you know, like. Man, we all did it. I made a Facebook post, however, 7 years ago. I put a lot of heart and blood and sweat into that post, and it went, meow. And I was like, never again. Just never again. It's just as simple as that, you know?
That's funny.
And then I know on my old profile, I remember this is just one of the things I was thinking of. There was when I was living in Grand Forks, I'd moved there, and I thought, you know, I was just a stupid kid, militant. You know, not militant, but like I got my values. I'm going to throw them all over everybody and I'm going to be right.
Rebel without a cause.
Rebel without a cause. Man, I was straight James Dean out. Dean? James Dean. Yeah, I had the cigarettes there rolled up, leather jacket. And there was this measure that was being voted on right when I moved there. It was during elections. And yeah, that sounds about right. It was 2012. and there was a proposition for basically holding back birth control and this and that and whatever for, and I was super, you know, still am, but I don't know, whatever you call it. Just, you know, I wanted rights for everybody, birth control being one of them. And I walk around and I remember seeing a, you know, vote yes on this proposition sign, and I tear it up, you know, like a dummy. And I remember I made a Facebook post about it. Probably the most traction I ever got on a Facebook post ever.
Controversial.
Yeah. You know, and I'm sure in there somewhere was, if you don't like it, you could go ahead and unfriend me. I was that guy at some point.
Oh, we all were, weren't we?
Yeah, I think so. Until I actually wrote something that meant something to me, and it got nothing, you know? Yeah. So never again. Deleted that whole account. I wish I could look back on it. The pictures that I posted, just everything about it, I can't believe I used to act like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just such a different person. Yeah. You know?
I stole a Trump sign from somebody's yard. My best friend's yard.
Right. In jest.
In jest. Totally. I do not condone stealing or theft of any kind. Unless you got to like steal a loaf of bread to feed your family, I'm, you know, whatever. I can understand that.
In that case, you know, your family gets to eat, you go to jail.
Yeah.
There you go. And you get three squares.
Yeah. 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 You get fed too, right? Everybody's happy then. But I stole the sign totally in jest as fun and did not realize till later on that it was not fun for the family. And this was at the very early like points of the Trump sign stealing phenomena that was going on, and I swear everybody, I did it totally as a joke. I gave it back to him, but and that's when I gave him the sign back. It was that's when he proceeded to let me know that how much of a not funny joke it was among his family and how close like the police were to getting involved and stuff. But it just strikes me like back then you could like put a post on Facebook about that and get some traction. I don't know. I don't know what would happen if I'd like joked on there like I stole somebody's Trump sign and it
Facebook is different now.
Yeah,
you get shared around. I don't know if you'd get canceled or promoted or I think all of it.
Well, and since this is a joke, surely, so I don't even know why I'm like telling you this roundabout story here, but
that's pertains to what I was talking about a little bit, you know.
Hey, stealing signs and tearing up signs is just—it's not as big of a thing. It's not like a not as much activism as maybe we think at the time.
Yeah,
that it is.
Exactly. I thought I was doing the world a favor. You know, I felt very important about it.
Yeah, right.
And,
there you go.
And it turns out I wasn't. Measure passed. What am I going to do? You know. You know, just when I think back to those old times, it's just hard sometimes to really, you know, like myself. You know, every time I think back, it's just like I'm just glad I'm not that way anymore.
Yeah, and that's at as long as you're taking some self reflection, maybe even a little self pity, but again, a self reflection is good for a person as long as you don't use it as the end all be all or an end in and of itself, you know, if you use that as a stepping stone to be a better person, you're doing something very right and something that a lot of people can't do. Now to wallow or mire in your own self-pity and self-reflection, that's not good for anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're going to get nowhere doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a time for everything. Mourn and then move on.
Right.
Pick yourself back up. Make it happen for you.
Yeah.
So.
That's about the best. It's like, oh, that was an embarrassing time. Well, I'm not that guy anymore.
The greatest miracles that we're even just alive, you know? Yeah. I mean, that we can talk about all this stuff. You know, every day I wake up, I know I can start off on a good note there.
Right.
I only got so many of those days.
Yeah.
So might as well try to start them on the right feet, you know?
For sure.
So what's the one commodity we can't make any more of? Time.
Right.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, you only got so much.
Yeah.
Well, land, unless we make it to Mars, okay?
Yeah.
We ain't making no more land. Well, no, but there is a whole dang planet out there that we haven't taken over yet, okay?
Yeah. And realistically, I'm for Mars. I'm just trying to be absurd.
I know.
I would love to go to Mars.
Well, you asked about 10 year ago got me versus 10 year ago today versus today me. Titles. My titles, the title I carried professionally was something that I cared about 10 years ago.
Right.
That I thought I would continue to care about, I guess, even. Because I found out money wasn't my motivator 30 years ago.
Right.
But
You like to have the J. Lindley, M.D., G., J.D., P.C.P., all that on there. No.
I mean, yeah, it was just, no, it was like, you know, being the operations manager, being the program director, being those in radio, being those positions in radio were very important to me.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I could say a title feels a little bit important, but it always depends on how you get to it, you know? And, you know, I don't know. I guess I got here through potential merit and just potential.
Yeah.
But, luck, you know, and this, luck, yeah. I did not earn this position.
I mean, you, Jay, fought every inch of your way in, yeah. this, in this industry, yeah. you know?
I've spent a lot of time in it. I have learned every aspect of it. And I respected people that did that 20 years ago when I looked at the folks that knew what they were doing in radio. They had, you know, some of them. I know a guy, this is an entire little story in itself.
Go into it.
10 years ago, 10 years from now. But I worked with one of the guys that was a pioneer of XM radio. I mean, he was one of the first jocks that was doing rock radio on XM. That was back when it was a jukebox. You know, I've talked with people. Listen, now we can go back 40 years in the game. I wasn't 40 years ago, but the people I've worked with going 40 years ago, I can tell you a story about a lady that thought FM radio was going to be a jukebox.
Right.
They're just going to play the music. You're never going to be able to sell it. AM is where the money is.
Right. Mm.
So it's funny. This industry has changed quite a bit over 20 years, but titles, they come and go. But you're earning your title. You said you didn't earn it. You know, it was maybe potential that, you know, the merit off your potential that you. No, you're earning your title. Yeah. The potential that they saw, that someone saw in you, you are realizing. So
right. Yeah, I guess, you know, I definitely took things a lot less serious 10 years ago, you know. But 10 years ago, I was just a, you know, service associate rep, you know, for whatever place. Or, you know, worked some dumb forklift thing or, you know, whatever it was. Just nothing of value. So I placed no value in it or myself. You know, it was more about getting off work.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, something switched there. Don't know what it was. But it became important work, you know, all of a sudden. And
was it enjoyable? When you noticed the switch, was that work you were doing at that time enjoyable?
I wouldn't say enjoyable. It just took my mind off of other things, you know, because let's say 10 years ago, the job was crappy. I did a crappy job at it, and I would just live to leave, and
right.
then I would just live my crappy,
paycheck.
My paycheck, and then I'd go home to a crappy life. So it was all bad, you know. And that was of my own doing, you know. I made it.
It wasn't Obama's fault.
It was not Obama's fault. Now Obamanomics had a little bit to do with it. No, I'm kidding. But you know, when I started caring about work, I was like, hey, I can't seem to make my life feel great. So let's just try and make the job feel good, you know, and then maybe that'll lend. And it does in a way, because once you leave the job that you just did a really good job at and you feel like you're integral and it wouldn't roll like it does without you, then you can kind of live life a little bit taller, you know, just kind of just know that you're doing a good job. And hey, that's sometimes the best that you can be asked to do is just good job.
Yes.
Know?
And As much flack as we can all give, millennials being millennials, we can, and I know you don't like to count yourself as one, but you're one.
I'm a what?
A millennial.
Gen X, 79.
See, I thought that's the beginning of millennial.
No, 79 it's 80 to 2000.
Okay. Well, you're just on the cusp of it.
Right.
You can pretty much.
Gen X.
We'll take you. But I've read some really good studies. The Atlantic did a great article on it. And they sometimes have these like oddball articles, and that was one of them where they had done a study showing that average millennial paycheck is not the most important thing they see from their job. It's a sense of worth,
right?
You know, and for a millennial, and look, we are a softer society, and there's a lot of generations who had to work really hard.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be very hard to make this an easier, softer society to live in. And at the end of the day, your average millennial just wants to pat on the back and be like, "Yeah, hey, good work today."
Right.
You know, and to them, that's as good as a paycheck.
And they do the same thing. I mean, it's like a millennial. I just feel like they'll be like, "That was terrible service, but I'm still going to tip them and give them a 5-star review because that person needs to eat."
Yeah.
The facts were coming from my head, so I want to double check. The actual millennial says here start date 1981, end date 1996, which doesn't make sense because the only true millennial was someone born on 2000, obviously.
Right. I don't know what any of the millennial thing means. I think
it's that you became an age at the around the millennium. That when you can finally start to have a few memories and coherent thoughts and stuff. Now, 96, that would make you 4 in 2000, so I don't know how much you're remembering from them, but I guess you're at least starting to be formed as a person.
Right. I was 7 when the millennium happened, so I don't know, you know. I don't think it had that big of an impact.
Right. And again, these are very false categories.
They're all made broad. Up.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's just a simple category that, you know, depending on when you were born, you get filtered into.
We like to take complex societal issues and then squeeze them down into just a little simple nugget that we can all swallow and make sense of, even if they don't.
Yeah, we'll just put it this way. At 7th grade, my language teacher was like, "Well, you Gen Xers think you know it all." I just remember that very clearly. That's the 7th grade middle school, Webster Middle School.
Right.
I'm actually friends with her on Facebook now.
Yep.
I would have never believed she would have accepted my friend request. I was a bad 7th grader.
Yeah, thinking bad back to school times, man, that was rough. It's just rough thinking back to then, and it's hard to remember it. I don't have many memories of that time that I haven't just like suppressed, I guess.
I remember for much of the schooling moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And so it was hard to ever like have roots where you could form like lasting memories for a while.
Yeah.
At least not until like high school, you know, but a lot of before then. Yeah. It's difficult for me because there's so much moving around. It's hard to like pinpoint anything. And
yeah. See, I lived in the same house till I moved out of my parents' house, grew up in the same house. Matter of fact, my parents had to move out of that house because my brother wouldn't move out. 25 years later, my brother just bought it from my parents.
Right.
They moved out.
You want to talk of where some of America's problems come from? It's the decline in people who can say that. I have two friends, UJ and Brandon, who both grew up in a household where their parents stayed together. You know, and that is such an exceedingly rare thing. I can't think of maybe anybody else. Chris G, him, but nobody else.
I think that just goes to show you how most marriages just fail. I mean, like, it's hard. It's hard to find two people that are definitely just going to forever be together. And some just stay together for the kids, which is definitely the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, people are people. Your mom and dad, they're still humans, you know. Mm-hmm. They still are going to grow to maybe hate each other, not like each other, think the whole thing was a mistake. And it's you know, I don't know.
Well, and maybe the whole idea of the nuclear family is a fallacy to begin with. The single family household where it's you, your spouse, and your kids, which that does just not throw a whole lot of division of labor into the mix. Imagine if you can, let's say, now as a family, which is some more traditional societies, and say you see that in a lot of immigrant communities because that's what they're used to back in the maybe they're coming from countries that are less well off financially, but maybe you could say socially they're stronger than we could ever be or that we ever have, that we've been in a very long time. And you're talking about we joke about it here. I hear plenty of Native folks here talk that make fun of certain maybe immigrant population where they live with their cousins, their uncle and aunt, maybe their grandparents, they all live maybe in the same house. Now, they pull their resources. It's a very big house. It's a nice house, but you have a lot of people living in it. But that also means there's a lot of division of labor. It means, like, you and your wife want to go out for the night and do something on a Tuesday night, but you don't have to, like, arrange this thing where, like, a babysitter comes over. Oh, you can't find a babysitter. Oh, you got a pair. Hey, you know, maybe your mother-in-law lives in the house with you, and now she's going to watch the kid. You guys have free night out, you know?
Right.
Again, you guys just need a little time away. Well, you got somebody else in the household that, again, that is pooling their labor together.
No, please.
My question would be, why would somebody else care if they're living that lifestyle?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Why would they? Because I hear that a lot, especially in small town USA.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, there, you know, there's 32 people living in that house. You know,
because
they're
they want it and they can't have it, and exactly. So the easiest thing to do is make fun of it.
It's true. That's a good point.
As I make fun of rich people all the time because I'm not rich.
Yeah. I guess it's just kind of like divorce and picking and choosing and being able to live wanting to live the lifestyle that you want to live. That's quintessentially American, isn't it? Like in other places where they don't have that luxury, I mean, you might just stay together because financially you can't make it on your own. Mm. Or you have to. This is just the way it is. This is how society works from where you are. So you don't have that luxury of being, you know what? Your balls are starting to smell funny. I'm leaving you and going somewhere else. You know, that's they just deal with it.
God, I hope that don't happen.
I was going to say, because I'm probably, you know, ass out if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the white. But that's another thing. I mean, we could sit here and go into the whole marriage thing versus divorce. I just looked up the stat. It looks like apparently estimated 41% of all first marriages end in divorce at this time.
Yeah.
So I thought it was closer to 50%.
I guess we're 70.
Yeah, I mean, but I think if you look at all the all marriages, you go up to like 70% because you get people that doing fifth, sixth, and seventh divorce.
Yeah. Right.
Usually you commit a crime, your chances of committing another crime are really high. Right. So you get a divorce, your chances of getting another divorce, probably pretty good.
It's called recidivism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. I think.
Don't they use that jail?
Yeah.
I did hear
felon.
A criminal justice professional try to say that word recently and just could not. So just gave up. You know what I mean. Like, yes, I do, but maybe you should too.
Yeah, millennials, man, they're not getting married. They're not, I think that's just a declining thing. And I know there's a religious aspect. I know that. But I just feel like America stamped that into the dust, you know? I mean, it doesn't mean what it used to. Now it's, I mean, if you and Caitlin weren't married, you guys wouldn't be so, you guys wouldn't be so burdened tax-wise, you know? Like, as soon you just get together and all of a sudden you owe a crap load of money and you have to file all this stuff and you have to be into, like, the government just totally in on it. And it just, you know, I just think it's been, you know, devalued or whatever.
Well, but at the same time, and I don't want to break it down to like purely financial matters, but it also by us being legally bonded to one another, we both can enjoy maybe a lifestyle that we wouldn't be able to otherwise. Now, that's not to say that marriage and settling down, obviously, that will challenge your ambitions. Perhaps, you know, if those ambitions would take you other places, because then it's very now you got two people that have to find jobs, have to make a living to if you want to go to a new place, as opposed to you just going off on your own. But to me, at the end of the day, being comfortable where I'm at, it's fantastic to have somebody that I am legally bonded to. That again, we can pull our resources together.
Well, you can do that without being married, though.
Yeah, you can. Yes, but that can also end in a second. You know.
Yeah, but that's kind of good because then you can, you know, just amicably split ways
right.
and not
but
have
not,
to worry about.
The worst thing you could ever do is buy a house with somebody you're not married to. It would be absolute disaster.
That's true. But another worst thing that you could do is lose your house to the person you were married to.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So I think it kind of cuts both ways. I think it'd just be smarter, you know, to...
And I'm lucky. I get to maintain an ideal vision of marriage because I feel like I have a successful one, and I could never imagine it coming to an end. So at the end of the day, that's where I'm coming from on my perspective. So maybe I'm too idealistic about it, but
well, going into a union, thinking now we're going to have two incomes, so that's going to be so much better. Only really means that you assume they're going to spend less than you because their income is now going to make yours better.
Right.
And which is true in my marriage because
and mine.
If it wasn't for me, we would never spend money in our house. So
right. Oh, well, and my wife is just what she does for a living is makes exponentially more than what I do for a living. So it just works out that way. Mm. So. Yeah, with
you got to help her spend some of her money,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you get you good husband.
No, she spends it just fine. No, I'm the investor in the family. Even though I have no problem spending, my philosophy is, if we spend all the money, we'll make some more.
Mm.
But, you know, we'll go out and make some more. If we spend it all, we'll go make some more. Right now, we can do that.
I've seen you battling for like 4 weeks now. Like, should I get that intake for the Mustang or not? Or the turbo, I'm sorry. Yeah, and I'm just like, man, you're just smart financially. You know, absolutely. But you're getting as much enjoyment mulling the idea of putting a turbo on your Mustang as you would if you just went and bought the thing and slapped it on there.
That's true. I just, maybe I'm projecting a little bit. I don't think I'm ever going to get married. And I feel like that's me.
Sure, yeah.
You know, like.
How many successful marriages have you been around, too? So.
Ooh, good point.
Not a whole lot. And even the successful ones, you know, there's so much there, mm-hmm. you know? And honestly.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the other person. It's more me. Like, I think I'd be hard, man. I think I'd be a hard person to be married to. I'm a hard person to date. I'm a hard person to just, like, be around a lot.
Hey, the societal pressures that say you got to get married. That you and your spouse and your kids all need to live in one house and not be anywhere close to, not live on the same property as any of your family members. Where does it come from? Even if it's just a traditional thing, well, where do those traditions come from? You know, a marriage. You know what? Marriage only used to be for like rich people of different like warring parties and kingdoms. So yeah. The hope was is that if the princess of Schleswig-Holstein marries the prince of Bavaria, that maybe Bavaria and Schleswig-Holstein won't fight each other at some point because now they're like related by marriage. Yeah. Right. You know?
The princess also has huge tracts of land.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. The whole idea is just scary. So maybe I'm like of that old school mindset. I don't want change, you know? Man, every relationship I've ever had, no matter how good I thought it was going to be, I ended up wrecking it in some way. I'll always find a way. And the idea of having kids or government or my money on the line of my, you know, that's too much pressure, man. I'm going to frig it up some way or another. I will find a way. Trust me.
Well, you made a joke recently, like, "Hey, we love each other. Now let's get the government involved."
Yeah, great. Yeah, that, just in my case, bad idea. Yeah. Considering how I'm always like, you know what? I'm not going to be this anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to go way off that direction.
In fact, I'm not even sure if you pay taxes or not.
Exactly.
So, like, what
I
experience
know.
Do you have with the government?
And like, you look. Can't ride a bicycle. Do I even look like I know where my birth certificate is?
Do you think you could ride a bicycle?
Yeah. Does he look like he has his Social Security card? It's probably in his mom's purse.
Yeah. Still. Oh, man. I guess that's just a personal, you know, a personal thing where I just don't think I can give that part of myself to somebody, and they certainly don't want it. They do not want that. Sure. And
there's no this whole like, well, there's somebody out there for everybody. Well, maybe, but there's no, I don't see it as like some preordained destined thing, you know, but hey, some folks are lucky, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And I think both of you and I have talked about it before. We're lucky to have been with somebody who is able and has the desire to turn us into better people, and we're just in the right position in our lives that we're willing to take that.
Exactly.
Right.
That's a great point. If I had met Laura at 20 versus meeting her at 30, she would have never given me the time of day.
Mm. Right.
Because I was a completely different person.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm, absolutely.
I was not the man I was at 30.
Right.
That I was
She would have put your ass in prison.
Exactly. No, seriously. Yeah. She was a prosecutor. She would have been prosecuted.
Yeah, yeah.
If I was in her jurisdiction.
Little did she know that she married that man. That's 10 right. years later.
Thank goodness she knew an attorney to get some stuff expunged.
Yeah. And there's a wide enough gap between each of our generations that y'all don't know what maybe you guys do. You get to witness it sometimes like on TikTok or whatever. But my generation, oh my goodness, man, there's nobody. There's nobody of worth. You're all worthless, by the way,
I mean,
including me.
I got a 21-year-old. He's 5 years shy of you. You know what I mean? That's pretty close.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Aren't you 26?
27.
27. Okay, yeah. 6 years shy of you.
What do you mean?
It's not like, well, he's single, you know, Tyler?
And, oh.
No. What I'm saying is I don't know. I guess I don't see your generation as lost.
Right.
I guess. I see promise in your generation.
Right. I can't relate. that's my problem, I guess. I can't relate. I mean, anytime I meet somebody of my age group, it's just like I'm so far off. And that's not a good thing. I'm not saying I'm better or worse or any of that. I'm just, there's just such a separation there that I don't even know where to begin. Like the idea of, like, I'm just, I have resigned myself to knowing that while I am living here, I just am going to be a single person, and I'm fine with that.
Your job wise, you are much more mature than
mature.
Yeah, you're much more mature.
You sound so mature saying that.
Yeah, I know, right? When it comes to your work and your work habits and your work ethic, whatever they call it.
Yeah, my business acumen.
Yeah, you are 37. Not 27. Does that make sense?
No, I agree with
you. So, I can see how your personal life may suffer from that. Because your average 26, 27-year-old is still partying a little bit, probably, maybe.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So they're not used to Friday night we're going to sit in a campfire and just chill and listen to a little music and what? No, I mean, they're wanting to go to Texarkana or to wherever there is around them that they party.
Right.
So I can see how you could feel disconnected from your age group.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's something about dating, too. I don't know the last time you guys had to do it, but I feel out of the loop now. I thought I used to be good at it. Not anymore. I just seem to not. Things get so heavy, man.
Yeah.
They get heavy quick. And you know what? I'm a quick person to really like somebody.
Yeah.
You know, which is bad. That's a bad place to be. And
it's kind of like one of the first things you do is like trade social media accounts, right?
Yeah.
You can kind of determine
from
there.
You can literally find out anything, can't you?
Yeah.
See your political ideas, how many friends you got. If you got like, 16 friends or something, you might be a creep,
Yeah.
So stay away from that,
Good point.
Yep. Yeah, it's getting harder. It's getting harder and harder to relate. And the idea of like dating around here, trying to like, and not to mention the women of my age around here, if they're good.
Yeah.
They got a good job. They got somebody.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean? They're married already.
Yeah, yeah. The
with
ones
like,
that
with
aren't.
Two, one or two kids?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know what? I personally don't want kids. If something happened and I all of a sudden had a kid, I think I could do pretty well at it. I'm definitely not going to be,
It's hard to find a young woman professional that has chosen her profession that has stayed around here.
Oh, absolutely. The opportunity is just not here. Yeah.
That's
so I can see that. I mean, you are a very, like I said, you're professionally oriented. You're driven professionally. You stay at work a lot.
Right.
You know, even when you don't have to be, you're here on many occasions. So I could see where a woman that is not professionally oriented wouldn't be interested, would wonder, why aren't you spending more time with me, on me, more attention on me, why at work, versus a professional woman. She's moved to Dallas already.
It's my number one. I wish I could date somebody who's being like, not tonight.
Yeah.
Love the idea of that.
Dude. So. And not relying you on you or their significant other for their like emotional support.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah.
Just get married. She'll usually say, not tonight, bro.
Yeah. No, Canada, you're able to drink when you're 18. It's legal drinking age.
I figure if you can go kill yourself in battle.
Right. Yeah.
Or get killed
vote,
in battle.
Or if you can get killed in battle or, drive a death machine, you should be able to drink as well.
Yeah, might as well let you have a beer.
American military believes that as well. Continue.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, who
they do.
Doesn't?
The American
who
military believe. I don't know that the Marines personally allow them to buy beer, but I don't know that the Marines say you can't drink beer amongst the 21-year-olds and above.
Yeah. How are you going to be going into battle and not,
right.
Exactly. Hey, you're 20.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know you just took Fallujah. Okay.
You cannot celebrate with
water. You want a chocolate milk?
Okay.
Sippy cup for you?
Yeah.
You want a little juice box?
Right.
You put that Coors Light down.
Yeah.
Court martial you out of here.
No, you should be able to tip up a bottle of Jack.
Exactly.
You got standing on the Capitol.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, interesting story from a good McDonald's story. I was not working there at the time, but we had a drinking night, you know, went off drinking, and we went to the local McDonald's that I used to work at. So I was standing outside smoking, and I see inside a little bit of an altercation going on.
Oh, really?
Between my friends that were in there.
Oh, you knew the people?
I knew we all went as a group. I stayed outside smoking.
Oh, okay,
they went into order, and I actually knew both parties. The other parties were people who went to our school. They were a little bit older than us.
Rivals.
Not rivals. Never ran into them. Just knew them. Okay. One guy's name, and I'm not going to make it up, his name was Gaetano. All these people related to my fights have weird names,
I know.
By the way.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Gaetano, Italian.
It's just reflected by the fact of how multicultural Canada is.
That's right. True. That's right. Yeah. It doesn't have to be two white boys or anything else.
You're beating up on some Croatian kid.
Give me the Tyson birthday club, and I'll let you know how.
Good point.
Yeah, that's a good point. So a bit of an altercation. I can see something going on in there, and you know, I'm looking through the window. And I see my friend get, and we call it the ultimate punch. It's where you throw both hands and a leg at the same time. It's from a movie called, what was that one called? It was like Hot Rod. Do you remember Hot Rod?
Not right offhand.
Stupid movie. Anyway, in it, there's a ultimate punch or something. I don't quite remember.
Two fists and a kick.
Two fists and a kick at the same time. Like that. And the
not
man
staggered, right?
No, all at once, they all hit, like if it was a video game,
yeah,
they would all register and hit your hitbox at the same time. That's
that
the
it?
One.
Is
that's
that
the
it?
One.
Okay.
Yeah. So
thank you for putting that in terms I can understand.
Yes, yes.
Adam Sandberg. I love that. I love Adam. Andy Sandberg. Sorry. Andy
yeah,
Sandberg.
Yeah.
I love Andy Sandberg. I love Adam Sandberg too, but Andy Sandberg. I love
right,
Andy
right.
Sandberg.
So where was I? So I see that. And immediately things are getting like there's just a bit of a scuffle. So I rush into the McDonald's with my smoke. In my
nice.
Yeah. And I get in the middle, and I don't remember exactly how, you know, there was some talking, there was some ultimate punches being thrown around, this and that. I get in the middle of both of them, and this is where my diplomat side was there. Because I would have been ready to help if I see my friend get ultimate punched, it's either I got to stop this or I got to disable.
Punch back.
Yeah,
yeah,
ultimate
exactly.
Punch him back.
Yeah.
I went with let's just disable this whole thing real quick. Because the punch was no damage. You know, it's,
they call
you
it
know,
defuse the situation.
Defuse the situation.
Nowadays. Yeah.
At this point, it was really just an ineffectual kerfuffle.
That's right. There was some horseplay.
Yeah. Some tomfoolery.
There was some tomfoolery. Yeah, that I wanted to rush in and just put a stop to.
Boys.
Some ruffians about.
Yeah, right. Actually, I came in with the classic, ladies.
Nice. Yeah,
even
disarming.
Better.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah.
Even better.
So come
impose
in with
your
that.
Authority like a elder white mountain gorilla or something.
That's right. And I'm towering over these guys. Gaetano, he's Italian. He's short.
Little guy.
He's short. Next to him is, I don't know, I don't remember his name. I remember him from high school. He was always crazy. And this dude was coked out. And he was tiny. And
so
like
he was
barking.
The one, yeah.
He was barking like DMX. So I always call him the coked out bulldog. You know? And so coked out bulldog, he's the one going really crazy. And he's going crazy on my friend, who's a pretty big guy too.
Right.
Little
man complex.
Yelling
huh?
at him. Yeah. Little man complex.
Straight up.
Got
like
all
it.
Kinds of jewelry, tats,
oh
tap out
goodness.
Shirt, and he's like 4'11".
Are you kidding me right meow?
Yeah. I'm serious. Oh,
tap out shirt.
One of the ones with all the crazy, like, I might date rape you, like, imagery
oh
on
my
it,
goodness.
You know? Whatever.
American fighter underwear.
That's right.
That is sad.
Yeah. So
sad but true.
He's going crazy, and I'm sitting there in between him. I come out, I'm a gentleman.
Right.
You know, we're all out of high school. We don't need to be participating. I'm puffing my cigarette in McDonald's. And there's a security guard in there. And he was like,
He was scared?
He was scared.
Okay.
He was not,
glad
not even square. He didn't have to go deal with it.
Exactly.
And man, I diffused it. It was a thing of beauty. And I don't remember it. I just remember the coked up bulldogs looking me right in the eyes. Twinkle. It was like, ding.
Aww.
You know, and he was looking at me. He's like, all right. You know, like squashed or whatever. Fine. We'll just, you know, leave it at that.
How much of it was, I don't want to catch ass whooping from this big feller?
I don't know, because
also,
he was
but
trying.
But he was coked up, so he may not have thought he was going to catch a whooping.
He was coked up and trying to fight a dude who's actually kind of bigger than me. Same height, but he was like not muscle bound, just like a kind of wider, bigger dude.
Right, I got you.
So he was trying to fight him.
But now another bigger dude
that's
has
true.
Come and was like.
That's true.
Two, yeah, two even big, if that's you're a little big bulldog, two more big bulldogs coming
yeah,
at you.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. And the man who was ultimate punched was not a bulldog. He was not a big guy. Okay. He was a smaller guy, gotcha. Which we are all very protective. Like,
I love that terminology.
Yeah.
The man who was ultimate punched.
Yeah, the man who was ultimate punched.
Doesn't sound like a very ultimate punch.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I mean,
imagine the four, you're all shoulders and weight and hip at that point. You're not putting your weight into it.
Right.
Sounds like a guy who would do that to you, if you beat him up, you would probably be in a lot of trouble.
Right. Yeah.
That's funny.
Like he'll get his dad to sue you.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know who my dad is. Yeah. No. Okay.
Or he's wearing a helmet already.
So, and you said the security guard had a twinkle in his eye?
No, coked up bulldog.
Oh, okay.
Who was next to the man.
It's a lot of characters.
So you got Guy Tano, the ultimate puncher.
Yeah.
You got my friend. You got my friend who was ultimate punched.
Punch-y.
Yeah, punchy. And you got coked up bulldog.
Which reminds me of Vin Diesel for some reason. We've been talking about Vin Diesel
recently.
Yeah.
Just put Vin Diesel. Imagine it was Vin Diesel, but like, you know, he lost his shins in an accident, okay, or something. So he's
Vin Diesel
very
was shorter
small.
Than they pretend
That's
he
true.
Was.
That's
shot
true.
Off by a Japanese machine gun.
That's right. So I'm trying to get through this because no, you're fine. Twinkle in his eye. He was like, all right, you know, backed off a couple feet, like whatever, squashed. And my friend, who was the person who was about to get beat up,
right?
Who was as tall as me, and he takes a couple steps back and he says, "Nice chain, f*t," to dude, and he went insane. The coked up bulldog went insane and just started pummeling on my friend.
No way.
Yeah, and
at that point,
when he
did
said
you
that,
feel like okay, my friend asked for this.
I took two steps back and said, "Whatever y'all about to do."
Yeah, y'all doing
that's some man shit.
So it was one on one. I agree.
This was some stupid boy shit. You just brought it to some man.
Right.
I gotta stop saying this. This was some stupid.
You can bleep it out. You gotta bleep it all out.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Sure.
It's good.
Because that's a man's insult. Then you just insulted a man and all that. So now men about to do what they about to do.
Yeah. And you gotta you gotta be a better man than him today.
Yeah. And just to cap it all off, worst fight I've ever seen in my life. It looked like you know in Looney Tunes when Tasmanian Devil's fighting somebody or something, and it's just like a tornado and there's arms and stars and stuff, but nobody's actually affected. Like by the end of it, everybody was good.
That's crazy.
Didn't go to the ground. They actually fought into the foyer that was there, McDonald's, and then eventually made it outside. And there was
all the cops at this point?
No,
that's hilarious.
There's fights, always fights at McDonald's at that hour. And
one of the benefits of working there.
Yeah, and one of the benefits of healthcare.
Yeah, right.
You know, a country has universal healthcare. You might take an ass whooping.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, not only am I not going to let you beat me up, I'm not taking a ride in that ambulance. You have any idea how expensive? I'm calling an Uber for my broken broken spine.
You got me a taxi and no one even going to the hospital.
Exactly. So I felt this connection with Coked Up Bulldog. I feel it to this day, and I think he felt it too. Like there was this something. Go ahead.
So your friend that got his ass beat, he was...
There was no winner and no loser.
Oh, yeah, you said there was no damage,
honest.
Really.
Yeah,
so.
I'd be honest if he got his butt kicked, he didn't.
But dude jumped on him trying to kick his butt because of the words he said.
Yeah, because of the words he said.
But your friend also proved that this dude wasn't really a bulldog. He was a chihuahua barking big.
That's true, too.
Because he didn't get no...
It's a bad matchup. I think, like, usually you think when a big dude and a small dude fight, it's going to be like big dude's just going to crush him out. But sometimes the distance and the height, length, like everything's off when you're fighting somebody of such a different. Now, it usually means big dude's going to swarm little dude. It didn't happen this time.
And if little dude is smart and is able to get inside, you can do some damage like this.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of damage just pushing up with your fists.
Didn't happen. They both stunk. And we ended up outside. And I just remember coked up bulldog dude comes right up to me.
Yeah, because you were the at that point you were the everybody's good dog.
Yeah, yeah.
He was before like Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah, that's
before the mauling of cats happened.
That's right.
Yeah,
it was exactly like a couple of cats fighting.
right, all right. That's enough of all that. Super fun episode. Way too much to edit down. We all want to extend a huge thanks to everyone listening and everyone who's sticking with us. This episode feels like a bit of a milestone, and we may be finding our groove, so we hope you guys keep up with us. We're preparing to get all of our social medias in order and trying to figure out some giveaway and merch type stuff, so keep you updated with that. And again, a huge thanks to everyone at WashitaPodcasts.com for making all this possible. All production and music credits myself. And a massive thanks to Patrick and Jay for carrying me through this one. For both of those guys, I'm Tyler Massey. We'll catch you on the next one.